Hello, welcome to the Colcast. I am your host, Chris Collins. It is Friday evening, Friday the 23rd of November, live from my studio slash the house. You know how this works by now. Not rich enough to afford a proper studio. In fact, my studio is it's actually just a microphone plugged into my iPhone, but benefits, studio can be wherever I want it to be. So it's been a bit of a weird topsy-turvy week in the MMA and fight world. I've had a couple of sad notes. Tony Bellew obviously retiring from boxing yesterday, I believe, officially, even though we all kind of knew it was coming. It's still sad to see such a British great bow out, but I think it was his time, wasn't it, after the Usyk loss. And we've had some high notes as well. Obviously, the biggest highlights are the events that are coming up this weekend. A couple of old school names fighting in Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. And then we've obviously got the UFC Beijing card. Not a whole lot of talent on that card, but I will be looking at the top two fights, two big heavyweight fights there, especially the headliner, which is Francis Ngannou versus Curtis Blaydes. Obviously not long ago, Francis Ngannou was the next coming of Jesus Christ, and now he's sort of fallen upon hard times, and he finds himself in a rematch with someone who has only one loss, which is Francis Ngannou. Bit of a weird fight between them originally. Not weird, but ended before it should have ended. The TKO loss for Curtis Blaydes in that one, but obviously due to doctor stoppage. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast and all the rest of the news that's been happening this week. But first and foremost, let's have a look at previous events that we've not already covered. So obviously last weekend I went over the big events from last week. We obviously had a big event yesterday coming from ONE FC with Brandon Vera headlining that card. Brandon Vera making his return after 2 years out against Mauro Cerilli. Mauro Cerilli, he was the former heavyweight champion over at Cage Warriors, was on a 5-fight win streak, including his last fight, which was a big 15-second knockout over Kyle Moore. And he got a taste of his own medicine, basically, in this one. Brandon Vera savagely knocking him out 64 seconds into the fight. Mauro just coming forward a bit too... What's the word to use? He looked amateurish, basically. Just, you can't come forward with absolutely no respect for your opponent the way that Mauro was doing to Brandon Vera. Brandon Vera is a veteran in every sense of the word. He's been in there with some of the best. There's just no way. Nasty striker, Brandon Vera, he always has been. There's just no way that he was going to let Mauro get away with just walking forward kind of hands down like he was. And he finished him quite swiftly with the left hook, the counter left hook, going backwards 64 seconds into the fight. And that's all that you can really say about that one. Brandon Vera making a victorious return to ONE FC. The only other fight on the card worth mentioning is obviously the co-main, Edward Folayang winning against Amir Khan to grab the vacant lightweight title over there in ONE FC. Very entertaining fight, the complete opposite from Vera and Cerilli. Very, very long fight, obviously going the full 5 rounds. To be honest, though, just as dominant as the headliners for Edward Folayang. I'd say from the second round onwards, just started to show the golf in class, particularly landing nasty elbows throughout the fight, opening up Amir. I say specifically with nasty, nasty elbows. It was a bit of a striking clinic, to be honest. He looked excellent, Folayang. And, you know, you've got the lightweight Grand Prix happening in early 2019 over there in ONE FC. Folayang will find himself in that. Amir Khan will obviously be another name that's involved in that. And they'll be going head-to-head with the likes of Some of you may have heard him, a former UFC lightweight champion called Eddie Alvarez. He'll be in that as well. That'll be his debut into the promotion. So it's going to be an interesting 2019 for Folly Yang. But he's set himself up well. He's grabbed the vacant title over there, and we'll see if he can keep hold of it. Basically, we'll see what happens over there in 2019. So, news for the week. It has been, like I say, it's been a very interesting week, to say the least. Plenty of ups, plenty of downs. We'll start with the biggest down first, something that I mentioned in the podcast earlier in the week. Cynthia Calvillo, missing weight, that video that came out. To be honest, I think I hit the nail on the head with how angry I got. I apologise for that again. It's just something that I feel very passionately about, very strongly about. Obviously, there have been deaths in other promotions, smaller promotions, including ONE FC, which is obviously a major world promotion, because of weight cutting. Obviously, ONE FC have taken big measures in their approach. They made big changes in the way that they have fighters join weight classes and weigh in the last couple of years. It's a big issue. I honestly don't know what the right answer is, but I can tell you what the right answer isn't, and it's not situations like you got last weekend when you've got Cynthia Calvillo trying to kill herself making weight. It's not good. It just puts a dark mark on the sport. I don't know. Much more experienced people in the sport have failed to come up with solutions. Much more experienced people than me in the sport, much more intelligent people have spoken about it. I'm not reinventing the wheel. You know, I said that earlier on in the week as well. Something just needs to be done, and hopefully, you know, the UFC, they set the bar for everyone else. Hopefully they can figure something out and everyone else can follow suit, just to make it safer for the fighters. A couple of fights that have been touted and announced. The first one that's been touted, and if you believe some of the bigger names in the sport, some of the pundits, you know, the likes of Joe Rogan and Brendan Schaub were discussing it on podcast earlier this week. Cowboy Cerrone, fresh off a big win last weekend against Mike Perry, his next fight might be Conor McGregor at lightweight. Oh, it's a big fight. It's a big fight. I would love to see that fight. I've been interested in seeing this fight ever since Cowboy and Conor had a bit of back and forth, you know, quite a few years ago now, when Conor was starting to make a name for himself at 155 and Cowboy was obviously still at that weight class. But now that Cowboy's returning to 155 after a big win, now that Conor's coming off a loss against Khabib and needs a fight to get him back into title contention, why the fuck not? Why not? It's a great fight. It's a winnable fight for Cowboy. It's a winnable fight for Conor. Someone's going to get knocked out. Let's see it. Just book it. Just book it. What's the worst that could happen? It would headline a pay-per-view. It could even smash pay-per-view records. Cowboy's got a cult following. He's got a massive MMA following. Conor obviously transcends the sport and brings in all sorts of casual, sort of non-MMA, general sort of fight fans that watch all of his events. You've seen how big his drawing power is from the fact that there was hardly any promotion, really, to be honest, with him and Khabib, apart from Dolly going through the bus window, and it broke the UFC pay-per-view record. So let's see it. Book it now. Winner gets a title shot, done deal. Nick Diaz has been confirmed as returning at UFC 235 in March. His opponent will be Jorge Masvidal. This is a very, very good fight. It's a very good fight because Jorge Masvidal is going to give Nick Diaz the kind of fight that Nick Diaz wants. Stand up, war. Probably an all-out just boxing match. You probably won't see, although Jorge Masvidal is a very good kicker, Nick Diaz isn't a very bad kicker himself, but you're probably just going to see this be on the feet, using the boxing all the way through. You're unlikely to see any wrestling. Jorge Masvidal is actually a very good wrestler, but you know, Nick Diaz has got a very nasty ground game, as you can all imagine. Training out of Cesar Gracie, both him and Nate are not only animals themselves, but they train with animals on the ground. You know, you're talking the likes of Gilbert Melendez, Jake Shields, etc. It's a nasty camp for jiu-jitsu. That's sort of Cesar Gracie pack. It's going to be a very entertaining fight, this. Like I say, probably going to be fought mostly on the feet. We'll analyse it closer to the event time next year, but fantastic matchmaking again from the UFC. Bravo. Nick Diaz making his return against Jorge Masvidal. It'd be good to see one of the Diaz brothers back. Hopefully we'll get the other one back next year as well. The press conference for the Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz fight this week was interesting, wasn't it? Oscar De La Hoya just looked like he didn't have a clue what the fuck he was doing or what he was even talking about. Couldn't name fighters on the card. Couldn't even pronounce, talk about pronunciation, I can't even say pronounce. Couldn't even pronounce Chuck Liddell's name correctly. Chuck Liddell? Chuck Liddell? Who's that? That's no one. It's Liddell. Everyone knows it's Liddell. My girlfriend, who doesn't watch MMA at all, knows it's Chuck Liddell. Liddell? It was cringe. It was really cringeworthy to watch. It's just not the greatest promotion for an event that is already being touted by many as a shit show anyway. I'm personally looking forward to seeing the fight. Ever since, you know, I've heard him in interviews and I'm being a bit more active with the media over the last few weeks, I'm intrigued to see the fight again. Basically, I'm curious about how Chuck's going to look after such a long layoff. Is the layoff helped him? I know father time at times an issue when he's 48 and everything, but it could potentially be that the layoff actually, he's not going to look as good as he did 10 years ago. Let's face it, he's not. He's not. Father time, you know, no one defeats father time. He's undefeated. But the layoff might have actually helped him in the fact that he would have spent 10 years, you know, training aside, I don't know how he trains, but 10 years not taking any head trauma, not getting knocked out, not getting knocked about the gym. You know, maybe it's actually done him a favour. Who knows? There was those videos that came out of him training looking super, super slow. I think he's just trying to dupe Tito Ortiz. I don't think Tito Ortiz is wrong in what he's been saying, that, you know, Chuck Liddell's trying to pull the wool over his eyes. I'm genuinely curious about how Chuck's going to look. And with Ortiz, you know, he's been active over the last couple of years. He's looked good. He's picked up big wins. We'll see. But Oscar De La Hoya, God, my pronunciation is awful today, I apologise. Oscar De La Hoya is not doing them any favours. He's just running it like a bit of a shit show, to be honest. When it comes to MMA, I don't think he has a clue. Rory McDonald come out this week, spoke a little bit more about his fight with Gegard Mousasi earlier in the year and his performance, basically just saying that, you know, he just didn't get going. Not hard to believe from watching the fight. Probably is the worst I've ever seen Rory look. It's just one of them, you know. It's just really unfortunate that Rory's had an off night at the office on what just happened to be arguably the biggest fight of his career. And when you're going up against someone like Gegard Mousasi, an elite guy at 185, heavier guy than you, bigger guy than you, very talented striker, nightmare on the ground, he's just not going to get away with it. Unfortunately, you saw what happened that night. Would it be any different in a rematch? I don't know, to be honest. I wouldn't ever count out Rory McDonald against anyone, even in these kind of fights that I've seen before, but it's a tough one. It'd be a tough go against Gegard again. I don't think he's ever going to get that fight again, and I think Rory's just better off focusing on sort of the welterweight tournament that's going on in Bellator at the moment and defending his title and that. So unlucky Rory McDonald, not the greatest performance in the world, but he will get a chance in 2019 to put that to bed and carry on being dominant at 170. Fabricio Werdum, he is currently banned for testing positive for, I think it was a steroid that he tested positive for. I think he's on a 2-year, or he's looking at a 2-year ban at least. But he's remaining active during his ban. He will be facing Gordon Ryan, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu phenom, in a combat Jiu-Jitsu match in February next year. Gordon Ryan, obviously a very, very big name in the BJJ circles. absolutely nasty, nasty BJJ practitioner. His grappling is absolutely outstanding. Combat jiu-jitsu, for those of you who don't know, is essentially jiu-jitsu with palm strikes on the ground. Bit more of a gateway into MMA for any BJJ guys who are interested in crossing over to the full sport of MMA. And it makes Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu a bit more fun for guys who are, you know, obviously successful in MMA and are interested in competing in Jiu-Jitsu but missing the strikes. It is very, very fun to watch. Very fun indeed. And that fight's going to be interesting. Obviously, strict grappling, I don't know, to be honest, because as nasty as Gordon Ryan is, you know, Fabricio Werdum is a phenom in his own right, but with the palm strikes adding in as well, it's going to favour Werdum a lot, I think, this, but you never know. Gordon Ryan's just a freak. He is an absolute freak. Either way, I wouldn't like to predict, but either way, it's going to be a very, very entertaining match to watch. Can't wait for that. It's going to be in February at some point, early February, I believe. And the top news story of the week, Rachel Ostovich was slated to face Paige VanZant in a headlining card early next year, I believe. I can't remember the date off the top of my head. I believe it was late January. It hasn't been confirmed yet, I don't think, but she is most definitely out of that now after she was assaulted by her husband, who is also an MMA fighter. Assaulted by her husband earlier this week. He's now been charged. With the story developing this week, he's now been charged with attempted murder. Yes, it was that bad. I believe he struck her a few times, broke her orbital bone, which is obviously going to rule her out of the VanZant fight. There's just not a lot you can say. He's a piece of shit, basically. He's just a... There's nothing I can say that's going to do it justice. He's just a nasty, nasty piece of work, isn't it? Anyone who assaults anyone, but to assault your wife is just, when you've got a kid together as well, it's a bit weird. It's a weird situation, but I'm not going to delve into it too deep. But I hope Rachel Ostovich is okay. I hope she recovers. I hope she gets the closure that she quite obviously needs from that relationship. I believe she's filing for a restraining order. That's a smart idea. Please do that. I can't see any struggle with her getting that from the courts over there in the States. So, yeah, sad situation. Sad to see her lose out on a big fight, Paige VanZant. But I'm sure the UFC will book that again down the line. And once we know who VanZant's going to be facing in that headlining event, we'll report it here on the Coldcast. So that's pretty much it for news for the week. Now is the time to break down fights coming this weekend. So the first one up this weekend, first big event, is the daytime card for us British fans here in the UK. Even earlier daytime for everyone over in the US across the pond. God knows what time it's showing everywhere else in the world. But UFC Beijing, always a weird one with times, these cards, obviously as a result of daytime times, you know, people out on Saturday, even asleep, depending on where you are, there's not a lot of viewers. So it's always a bit of a weird move for fighters to want to be on these cards and to accept fighting on these cards, but hey-ho, there you go. Also, it's only being shown on Fight Pass, which doesn't exactly open it up to the most eyes again at the same time. So, as a result, it is a bit of a... How can I put this nicely? It's a rough one. Apart from the top two fights on the card, there are very few fighters that people will probably have heard of. So, the card from start to finish, you've obviously got Lewis Smolka kicking off the card. We know Lewis Smolka, very, very talented, former flyweight, stepping up to bantamweight. Obviously, that is part of the changes to the flyweight division, as in no more. So he's one of the flyweights slash bantamweights who I think the UFC are looking at keeping around. He's fighting a man called Sumo Deji. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it, but I've never heard of him. Otherwise, other people on the card, Siori Kondo, half-talented or semi-decently talented women's strawweight fighter. Gordon Bennett, Chris, come on, speak properly today. I do apologise, my pronunciation again, not on point. Siori Kondo, a semi-talented women's strawweight fighter. She will be fighting Yan Zhaonan. You should expect to see Kondo pick up a win there. Also in the women's strawweight division, Jessica Aguilar makes her return. She'll be fighting Zhang Weilai. You've got Keenan Song and Alex Morono as the headlines of the prelims. That should be a decent fight. A catchweight fight, 208 pounds. Hu Yao Zhong against Rashad Coulter. That should be a fun one. Rashad Coulter very heavy-handed, so you should see a finish there. On the main card itself, Chinese hero Li Zhongliang is fighting against David Zawada. Could go either way, this one. Li Zhongliang, very entertaining fighter, action fighter. Has actually picked up quite a few wins in the UFC. The one big glaring loss that he had was against Jake Matthews. Obviously tried to take a step up in competition. It did not go very well for him. Lost a decision there. Would have lost by submission if it wasn't for some cheeky eye gouging. David Zawada, many of you might not have heard of him. He is very heavy-handed, very, very heavy-handed indeed, which is why I'm going to pick Li Zhongliang. I think the hometown hero gets it done. However, that is with an asterisk next to it, because Li Zhongliang, action fighter that he is, along with that is the fact that he throws with reckless abandon, and if he gets clipped by Zawada, it's going to be an early night for him. So Li Zhongliang, asterisk next to it. Wouldn't be surprised if David Zawada won that one by knockout. Bantamweight, you've got Song Yadong against Vince Morales. Vince Morales, I've not really seen much of, to be quite honest. Song Yadong, on the other hand, is he's legit. The reason why I say that is because so far in his UFC career, he's picked up two wins. In his career anyway, he's 13-3. You know, decent record, not the best in the world, but decent. But his two UFC wins so far, he picked up a submission win against Barat Kandare. That was on the Bisping Gastelum card, I believe, the last time that the UFC was in China. Might have been the last time it was in China. I'm not sure they've been apart from that. Don't quote me on that. I'm not sure on that. Could be completely wrong. But, yeah, he picked up a very smart front choke there, submission front choke, in the first round against Barat Kandare. And then he picked up a TKO win against Felipe Arantes. That is a big win. That's a big, big win. Felipe Arantes is a monster. He's a super, super, super talented guy. He might have had a rough go of it recently, but he's beat some very good fighters in the UFC, and he only tends to get beat by very good fighters himself. So if I punch up, let's just look for Felipe Arantes. Felipe Arantes. So I've got Felipe Arantes' his record here in front of me, and you can start to see what I mean. In his UFC career, he's beaten Antonio Carvalho, Godofredo Pepe, Maximo Blanco, Yves Jabouin, and Jared Sanders. All good wins. All very, very good wins. His losses, he's lost against Ayori Alcantara. Animal. Ayori Alcantara has been an elite guy in that division for a long, long time. He had a draw against Milton Vieira. Split draw there in a fight that I felt he should have won. Kevin Souza, split decision again in a fight that was questionable. It could have very, very easily have gone to Arantes. Andre Feely pushed Andre Feely to a decision. We've all obviously heard of Andre Feely, the very, very talented Team Alpha male fighter. And in his last three fights, he's lost a split decision to Eric Perez. Eric Perez is no joke whatsoever. Very, very talented kid. Josh Emmett, who introduced himself to everyone when he starched Ricardo Lamas earlier this year, I think that was. and now he's coming up against Song Yudong. He lost against Song Yudong rather. That just shows, you know, Song Yudong is part of he's part of an elite group of people now. You know, he's in there with the guys I just mentioned: Josh Emmett, Eric Perez, Andre Feely. If you can beat Aranzes as convincingly as he did, you're legit for me. Nasty finish in round two of their fight on the Cowboy Edwards card earlier this year. It's going to be a very, very short night, I think, for Vince Morales. I think Song Yudong gets this one done. I think he gets it done very, very quickly. So Li Jiangliang and Song Yudong, I think, are going to make the Chinese fans very happy. Then you get to the top two fights on the card. And the co-main is a semi-important fight at heavyweight. It's obviously not the most packed division. There's not an awful lot of contenders at heavyweight. There never really has been. However, Sergey Pavlovich is a legit prospect, and he will very much be a contender and very much be in line if he can pick up a win against Alistair Overeem here. He's undefeated. Picked up an impressive win last time out, particularly against Kirill Sidelnikov, you've heard me speaking about very recently. Obviously, he fought in the Bellator card last weekend. God, I don't know what's wrong with me today. I can't talk. Fought in the Bellator card last weekend, baby Fedor. I obviously lost against Adam Koresh, but I've always rated Sidelnikov. I thought he's better than his record suggests. It was a particularly nasty win that Pavlovich picked up, winning by round one TKO. And, you know, he's beaten some good guys, Pavlovich, but he's never come up against an Alistair Overeem. We all know Alistair Overeem. He's fought everyone. He's beaten some of the best that there's ever been. He's beaten Vadum twice. He's beaten Vitor Belfort twice. You know, Paul Buntalo, Brett Rogers, Frank Mir, Stefan Struve, Roy Nelson, Junior Dos Santos, Mark Hunt he's beat twice, Arlovsky, Brock Lesnar, sent Brock Lesnar back into retirement with that nasty body kick. He's beaten everyone. He's beaten some of the best that there's ever been. He's been champion everywhere not called the UFC. And, you know, I wouldn't put it past Overeem, you know, to win this fight and win the title, you know, late on in his career. He really is that good. Every time we see him, he seems to just pick up new skills. And he always seems to perform better when you think he's not going to perform very well. So he's had a rough go of it recently. Obviously, that knockout loss to Curtis Blaydes, who's in the headliner of this card against Francis Ngannou, that was particularly nasty. But we've seen Vadum here before. We've seen him lose fights, and then we've seen him bounce back emphatically. I think that's going to happen again here, to be honest. I think you're going to see him use his striking very dominantly. I don't know how else to say it without being blunt. When it comes to striking, him and Pavlovich are not even on the same level. They're just not on the same level. The thing that's always been worrying about Alistair Overeem is, for such an elite striker, striking defence sometimes is just like, it can be very amateurish and he can be hit very easily. But as long as he minds his P's and Q's in this one, I think he wins by, I'm going to be modest and considerate. I'm going to say round two TKO. I just think he has far too much for Pavlovich. I think Pavlovich is a very, very good, legit prospect, but I think this is just too much too soon for his UFC debut. Moving on to the headliner, Francis Ngannou, Curtis Blaydes. If you would have put this fight 2 years ago, both men were on very different trajectories, to say the least. The last time that these two fought, yes, they have fought before, the last time these two fought was in 2016. Curtis Blaydes was relatively unknown. Francis Ngannou was on the way up. He'd already made a name for himself after that nasty knockout of Luis Enrique. These two guys fought. Fight, as I mentioned earlier, stopped before it should have. TKO, doctor stoppage. And then Francis Ngannou went on a tear. You know, he knocked out Mihailovic. He submitted Anthony Hamilton with that nasty Kimura. I thought he was going to snap his arm off. Knocked Arlovsky out. nearly killed Alistair Overeem, nearly took his head right off his shoulders, and then he got right into shot right into the stratosphere, all the marketing and everything behind him, got his title fight against Stipe Miocic. Everyone thought, you know, he was going to just destroy Miocic, and Miocic showed just how good he was. He, no way putting it, he mollywopped him in the decision. All five rounds, he was just clear as day. Ngannou had glaring holes in his wrestling defence, and he had glaring holes with his cardio and fitness. Then you put him in his next fight against Derek Lewis, one of the worst heavyweight fights I've ever seen. Derek Lewis winning the decision just by the sheer fact that he might have thrown like two or three more punches in the whole fight. Not really much else to say on that one. He's just taken a downward turn in Ngannou. His confidence has obviously been knocked from that Stipe Miocic loss. He looked terrible against Derek Lewis. I'm expecting him to look a lot better here, but it's whether it's going to be enough. Curtis Blaydes, he's only ever lost once in his career. That was to Francis Ngannou, as I've just mentioned, TKO doctor stoppage. Apart from that, he's been flawless. In his last two fights particularly, he beat the shit out of Mark Hunt for, you know, a very dominant decision, and then he nearly killed Overeem. So that's one thing that these guys, or two things that these guys got in common. They've shared a ring before, and both of them nearly killed Alistair Overeem. That's where the similarities stop. Classic striker versus grappler matchup. Curtis Blaydes is going to want to work his wrestling, get him down to the ground, and start landing heavy ground and pound. Francis Ngannou is going to want to defend takedowns and knock Curtis Blaydes the fuck out. It's just whichever one can happen. It's one or the other. And I have a feeling that Curtis Blaydes is going to compile even more misery on Francis Ngannou. He's going to get Ngannou down, be relentless in that first round, really push his gas tank, and then he's just going to start taking over from there. I don't think he'll get the finish, but I think he wins this one by a very, very, very dominant five-round decision, maybe a 50-43 or a 50-44. And that brings us on to the big, big fight of the weekend. Chuck Liddell against Tito Ortiz. I'm not going to talk about any of the other fights on that card. It's quite an unremarkable card, to be honest. I think it's got like 18 fights on the whole thing. The only fight to write home about is the main event itself. 48-year-old Chuck Liddell against 41. I want to say Tito Ortiz is 41. Might be completely wrong on that. I need to double check that actually, but that will do my head in. I can't remember how old Tito Ortiz is. But point being, they're both very, very, very much past their prime, and they are just running this one back for nostalgia. Probably means a little bit more for Tito Ortiz. You know, he's lost twice to Chuck Liddell before, both in what was very humiliating, embarrassing fashion for him. And he'll definitely want this one back. For Chuck Liddell, it's a chance to come out of retirement. A retirement that he didn't really want to go into, but he was wisely advised by a lot of people, including Dana White at the time, to go into. And it's just a chance to see that if he can still be competitive, albeit against an older fighter like himself. The story of this fight really is, it's difficult because the last time we saw Chuck Liddell, he was getting knocked out often, and he was getting knocked out badly. His chin had obviously gone, and it was time for him to, you know, hang up the gloves, which he did. With Tito Ortiz, he's been, you know, he's been very active over the last few years. So, and I say very active for Tito Ortiz. So if I just have a look at Tito Ortiz's record here, he's 43, by the way, Tito Ortiz. So he's even older than I thought he was. It really is a veterans matchup, this. So starting from after he left the UFC, so obviously he left the UFC after a competitive decision loss to Forrest Griffin that closed out that trilogy. Went over to Bellator, picked up, you know, an impressive run over Alexander Shlemenko. Alexander Shlemenko is a 185er, but it was impressive all the same. Won that fight convincingly, finishing Shlemenko in the first round by arm triangle. Then he won his next fight against Stefan Bonner, wasn't the most entertaining fight in the world, but still won that one by split decision. Was looking very competitive against Liam McGeary before he was caught in a triangle choke late on in round one in that one. That was for the Bellator light heavyweight title. And then he won his next fight against Chael Sonnen. So in the last 4 years, he's fought four times. That's four times more than Chuck Liddell's fought in, you know, the last God knows how many years. You look at Chuck Liddell's record, obviously his last fight was against Rich Franklin, where he was knocked out badly, despite Rich Franklin having a broken arm in that fight. Before that, he was badly knocked out by Mauricio Hua, and before that he was knocked out even worse by Rashad Evans. You know, picked up a win against Wanderlei Silva before that, and then, you know, the last win he had before that was against Tito Ortiz, knocked out by Quentin Jackson, split decision against Keith Jardine. At the end of his career, you know, he was in a bit of a nosedive. I mentioned it before, though, this might have actually done Chuck Liddell a world of good to step away from the sport, allow himself time to rest and recover, and just be away from the training room, taking constant hits to the head, constant concussions, constant blows. We honestly don't know. The X factor in this fight is we honestly do not know what Chuck Liddell's going to look like. We know what Tito Ortiz is going to look like because we've seen him fight semi-regularly over the last few years. We do not know what Chuck Liddell's going to look like, and that is what this fight honestly boils down to. My heart says that Chuck Liddell is going to roll back the years, use the obvious mental advantage that he has over Tito Ortiz here, and knock him out in the first round. My head says, wisdom says, the odds say, the experts say, everything points towards Tito Ortiz is going to mollywop him. He's younger, although not by much. He's fresher, again, although not by much. I think Tito Ortiz has had 1 million neck and back surgeries now. I don't think he has an authentic bone left in the spine of his body, to be honest. He's been a very grueling career for him, but younger, fresher, and he's just been more active. And he's beaten guys as well. It's not like he's been active recently. He's been getting beaten. He's beaten guys. He's beaten good guys. Like I said before, Stefan Bonner, Chael Sonnen, Alexander Shlemenko. Big names, decent fighters. It makes me sad to say, but I think Tito Ortiz, maybe they have a bit of a feeling out process in the first round, and then I think he takes Liddell down in the second round, gets to work, and maybe scores a TKO finish. So I'm going to say TKO in the second round by Tito Ortiz with ground and pound. Like I say, gets Liddell down and just finishes him. I hope he's not going to go that way. I really do hope it's as entertaining a fight as these guys are saying it's going to be. Chuck Liddell says he feels great and he's fighting and training better than he's done in years. Tito Ortiz is saying the same. I really do hope, for the fans' sake and for their sake, we get an entertaining fight. My head says it's not going to happen like that, but you never know. Stranger things have happened. Can't be any worse than Dada 5000 and Kimbo Slice, can it? God rest his soul. And that's pretty much it for this week's episode. Those two big events this weekend, UFC Beijing, very important for the heavyweight division, the UFC. And then you've got Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz helping us to roll back the years. And that is pretty much it. I can't think of anything else that's gone on this week. I think we've pretty much covered it all. A couple more events happening next weekend. We've obviously got very regular event schedule for the UFC at the moment, all the way up until the end of the year, that end of year card, UFC 232 between Alexander Gustafsson and John Jones, the rematch for the light heavyweight title. So plenty more to break down. I'm sure there'll be plenty more new stories, more fights getting announced. Connor, cowboy, please. Not that I really want to see that, but I really do. And that is pretty much it. Can't think of anything else. So I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. it's been a pleasure talking to you all again. I really hope that you are enjoying the podcast. I really hope that you're all enjoying this podcast and that you like, share, subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform that you're listening on, whether it's on Apple or Google or Spotify or Anchor or wherever else you're listening to this. Please like it. Please help me spread the word. If you've got any mates who are fight fans, MMA fans, let them know that there's a new show in tune. I am your host, Chris Collins. Pleasure speaking to you all and speak to you soon.